Well, maybe this immense presence that I feel has not very much to do with a head or behind, but it's sort of a vibratory difference.
Yes.
That I sense. And that vibration somehow helps me get to
it
that.
It heals you. It brings
place.
You to another plane of your own awareness. Yeah, I can hear that. It's like touching wisdom. Mm. Or touching truth, or touching beauty, or touching essence. Mm-hmm. As if they're not entrapping you in form. So you can become more vast in their presence. You know, it's like being close to somebody, and yet they're not judging you. It's so rare for us to ever experience unconditional love from another human being. Because other human beings all want something. They identify with their wants. Mm-hmm. And you don't get a feeling from the dolphin that it wants that badly. You get a feeling it is. Is that true, or am I
certainly get that feeling that they don't want. When they do want you out of the water, they, you know, it's unmistakable. Because they can be quite rough. The first time I swam with them, I also had the same feeling. I had sort of a feeling, oh, here I am with the dolphins. But their power, their immense power,
but that can, you know, that can be like Zen anger. Yeah. It can be not anger out of I want, but just anger out of the way of things, that it's appropriate to be fierce with you at that moment. Mm-hmm. Not out of they think I ought to be fierce with her. Fierce, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it also could be many other different things. It could be sexual. I think the raking is there.
I think we tend to really fall into the trap of anthropomorphizing really in a very...
We got
poignant
someplace
way.
Else to come from?
Poignant way. Yes, we do.
Aren't we human? Aren't we human?
Well, we're also human. We're also human. We're not exclusively human, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, and they're not exclusively dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like meeting another soul. Like, are you there? I'm there. Interesting life being a dolphin, isn't it? Well, you know what it's like being a human? We'll trade you next time.
You know, it's so marvelous. I haven't seen you for a year.
I know it.
And you're... You're different and yet the same.
Mm.
And here we are in the galaxy.
It's extraordinary. You know, this is one of the great women that I know in the world. Because she is... It's an interesting combination when you meet somebody like this that has all of the cultural, like the beauty and the intellect and the charisma, but also has a kind of wisdom that is like, I don't know how to describe it. It's a wisdom that it's like many planes. And when I'm with her, I'm enriched. It's like we meet on many planes. She's a very beautiful woman. It's fun to meet her there. Am I ruining it?
I love that. I absolutely love that. Well, you know I feel the same way about you.
Mm.
And I've already elaborated on that. But... I can also say that when I meet you, you fill my heart with joy. There's a joyousness that I'm able to feel. Now, I know I should take responsibility for my feelings, but I can't help but think that in your presence, I'm more capable of feeling certain dimensions.
Well, see, I've got my guru in my left ear, and he's full of cosmic giggle.
Mm.
He's always laughing at the whole thing. He's laughing at me taking myself so seriously. He's laughing at you. He's laughing at the whole thing. He thinks the whole thing's a big joke. Mm. And he loves it all. It's the same. It's all perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that giggle gets transmitted through me. And then you pick it up. I mean, it's catchy. It's like Mayor Baba says, love is catchy. Really. It's catchy. It's a resonance. It's a vibratory ray.
Do you feel that you have access to his presence most of the time?
Yeah, I would say I do. Mm. I'd say he's my friend, and we hang out together a lot.
Yeah.
And I'd say I think of him maybe thousands of times each day. Like I'd never take food without offering him some of it. I see him eat it. I'm just completely mad, you know. I mean, this is complete psychosis from me as a psychologist. You know, I've got an imaginary playmate.
Children do too.
But he's like the dolphins too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you felt like it was like he was human yet not human. It was like being with a wild animal. Like it was like somebody out of conceptual conspiracy. which we make believe to be somebody or other with each other. And there was a freshness about that that just caught me all the time.
I had many men as my gurus, but in the sense of most of the time, to acquire knowledge, I've not ever, except for you, had a feeling that a man could teach me joy, because I somehow felt that that...
It's interesting, a couple of things about that. One is that we always associated sexual sex role with the women are intuitive and the men are head trippy, sort of. And back at Harvard, we'd say strong people think, women and weak people intuit, And then it turned out that the intuitive mind was closer to what is than the thinking mind. I mean, the thinking mind's good to have as a servant, but... And I can feel that my whole spiritual work and all this stuff of working with consciousness is tuning me to that which you have more in your endocrine system more. I have to let go of a whole cultural model. Now, part of it has to do with my bisexuality, too, because that the soul is androgynous. It doesn't have male or female, and it has all the qualities of both. And it's every emotion, it's all of it, And I think that it's funny, because I always saw that as like a curse. From a psychological, dynamic point of view, from a spiritual point of view, it was merely what is. It's the stuff I had to work with. And I can see that that allows these qualities to be in me.
I'm just getting in touch with that. Just barely getting a glimmer of my androgynous self.
Yeah.
Because, maybe
because
my age.
The reason you've had you wait so long to do that is because you're a beautiful woman, and in the culture, you are kept by everybody's mind and vision in your role as being part of it.
Well,
it's interesting that as you then finally you can start to escape and you can allow yourself to just be a being and be a beautiful woman instead of needing to identify with a role. It's very hard for people to come on strong symbolically by having money or power or beauty to escape from their roles. I feel very sorry oftentimes.
But you know, Richard, I've not ever thought of myself as a beautiful woman.
Yeah, but others do. See, and you deal with their minds. We're always living in the projections of other people's minds, even though we're constantly saying, but I'm no good. It's just our trip. But the world we, I think it's, I'm feeling more, more of my maleness coming out as I have stopped judging myself so much for my androgyny. I can feel a deep kind of something Robert Bly was talking about, I think, in an article recently, about the kind of deeper male sexuality, and it's very exciting for me at 51 years old, you know.
We're the same age, practically. Well, I find that at my age now, I look back at all the attachments that I've had that have been sometimes very painful. And if I can evolve to a place where I can detach and just be in relationships, I think I will have done what I need to do.
Well, when you're using when you can see relationships as a vehicle to come into that space, that's like the yoga of relationships, using relationship as a yoga. Most people have a relationship and they do it as a support system for other things they want to do. Or they want to stay in the relational aspect of it. They don't want to use it to go into a vehicle which transcends transcends separateness so that it's one at play as two. Which is that one where you're really not attached. You come with a cup full. You don't come out of need. The relationship, you're not identified with the needs, even though the needs cause the meshing of the thing.
Well, the needs in my generation, an awful lot of women that I've known intimately have been manipulated by what we thought we should, how we should relate to the opposite sex.
Of course.
And
your models are what create your hell.
Right.
You know.
Famous, very famous French courtesan said, that a woman from 20 to 30, she only needed to be beautiful. From 30 to 40, she should really be great in the sack. And from 40 to 50, she had to be a great conversationalist. And from 50 on, all she needed was money. Now you see how male-oriented
that all
was.
Is. Yeah, I know. What a pathetic, poignant.
Well, you know, it has been many women.
It sure it has been.
This
it
last
sure it has been.
Generation.
Yeah.
And I think women today are freer of that and are willing.
I had a hard time all my life because I couldn't enter into the macho role. Hmm. And it was such a dominant theme, you know, how good you were and how hard and how, you know, tough and all these roles. And they never felt part of my being. And I always had to deal with that disparity, that I didn't really want to hang out in a bar being that person. Mm-hmm. But I was supposed to, you know, and I tried to want it, and it didn't work. It takes a long time to see that those models don't allow you the space to be what you are. That's a big one we're all learning. Then you see real beauty come out of a woman, when she is just true to her being, not a model. The model keeps people away.
We've certainly bought it, though.
Haven't we?
I have, anyway.
We all do.
Ways.
In fact, if we didn't buy it, we wouldn't take human births. It's built into the system. There's no way not to. Buddha had a great line. He said, everybody's got the five hindrances. He said, you've got lust and greed. That's one of them. That's not even two. And hatred and ill will, agitation, sloth and torpor, and doubt. He's five. So when I think about it, I think, well, if I were setting up a community, who will I put in it? Well, I'll put in people with lust and greed, hatred, agitation, sloth, and doubt. And this is it, you know, and this is who we are, because this is the kind of work we have to do. Mm-hmm. This is the attachment. And everybody's got them, unless they just drop down to bless us or something. I mean, that's why we take human birth.
Well, how do you suppose we can set up this community between dolphins and humans? I mean, what can we do as humans, fairly intelligent human beings, to sort of get some of the parameters so that interspecies communication can begin?
Well, in talking to Emmanuel about that, my spook friend, he said that it would be good if we really try to listen to their language rather than try to impose our own. And I think for that, we have to work on ourselves very hard to keep getting rid of our conceptual structures. So my feeling is just hanging out without a particular goal-oriented thing for quite a while, just being there and going through all your trips and then just being there and going through another trip and then being there is the way in which we're going to receive the optimum message about how to proceed. I mean, I would trust the dolphins to guide me how to proceed as much as I would trust my own mind, you know, as to what I think we should do. So I would just create a space where it feels comfortable and natural for both parties to be present and let it all evolve from that chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Children, I think, can help, don't you? Younger children,
yeah,
and
they,
older people.
Yeah, because they have
so
less conceptual models.
Well, we're hoping to put that together in Mexico.
That would be
Will
a beautiful thing. Sure, I'll come down. I'll come after being with Joe and Rosalie. I sure would come. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've told that story and how many people yearn to make that connection. And I think that's part of a spiritual yearning in people. It's a yearning for consciousness. I don't think it's just a fun and games. I think it's something deeper. It's an intuitive pull in people.
What happened to me, I think, was an awareness of how lonely I really felt. Not loneliness for other human beings, but lonely that somehow way back, I had made a distinction of separation. And that was somehow connected to this lure of the dolphins.
Exactly. But that's the lure of all things in life. Because somewhere way back, that's when you took birth and somehow you experience yourself as separate from the totality, which sometimes by bizarre thought is called falling out of grace or original sin or whatever you want to call it. But it's the nature of your birth that you were going to identify with your separateness. And that makes you yearn to come back into the totality. And it's like the orgasm, it's like scuba diving, it's like surfing, it's like hang gliding, it's like cooking a bouillabaisse, it's whatever it is that allows you to transcend. And I think there is a sense that through the dolphins, there is a sense of their wisdom, or their isness, or their presence that gives you the feeling that you can come back into your natural state through. And in that way, I think they're very healing. And it would just be interesting to have, say, groups of policymakers of some kind just hang out with dolphins and have their policy meetings with the, you know, with the dolphins present. I think that'll be fun to play too, because I would imagine it would change people's way of looking at problem solving.